Okay, then I'll start us off. Welcome back, everyone. My name is Kaz.
This is
And
Medibot.
this is some episode, which I didn't bother to look up the number of the Skulls cast, which I decided to do one of when I thought of a thing. Okay, so where I left off, I was in the middle of a set review with Slionine for like three Magic sets ago or
Oh,
something.
goodness.
Yeah, three or four, actually, come to think.
Do they still
And
keep making
they
those?
do. They make too many.
What a nightmare.
There are too many Magic cards. Just way too many. Yeah. So I decided that I did not want to continue with that. And like I still pay attention to Magic the Gathering, I just don't want to be a, I don't know, responsible for forming opinions about every new set and making jokes about the artwork. I'll let that come about naturally in the course of time when I'm joining other people who spend money on Magic the Gathering, and in the meantime, only spend like $15 a year on Magic the Gathering whenever we do the draft at MAGFest. That's that's my yearly Magic bucks.
Sounds about right.
That's what I keep myself to. Anyway, we're not talking about that. I am not going to continue that set review, nor do any other. Instead,
What are we going to talk about, Kaz?
we're going to talk about caves.
Caves! I
Oh
freaking
man, I don't know why
love
I'm so
caves.
I feel like a goofball. I just want to laugh all the time. Maybe that's okay.
In the
Wait.
cave?
Well, that or I'm having a stroke in the cave.
I mean, both of these things could happen in the cave.
So what actually happened was I was talking to Rosella and she speculated that how much she likes a given Final Fantasy correlates to how many caves are in it. And then she gave me this definition of cave, which she said is a purposefully obfuscated enclosed area full of treasure and random encounters.
Okay, so
Okay?
that's our initial
Yeah,
working
that's
definition
our working
of
definition of
cave.
cave. And with this you can apply that template to a lot of different things. So I wanted to say the Opera House in Final Fantasy VI, but there actually aren't any random encounters in that. There are kind of the rats up in the rafters are your encounters, but since you're under a time limit, they're actually like moving around and you can avoid them sort of. So that's not exactly it. But it would, the definition allows for things that are not graphically, say, presented as caves, even though we're going to be talking about that too, because man, do I love Space Cave, the character from Star Trek. You
Right,
know, you
so
ever.
that sort of definition of cave, one might also use the word dungeon. Because now a tower can be a cave. Many buildings can be caves. Many just places can be caves as long as they're enclosed, have treasure, and random encounters. So actually, I was doing some thinking today about cave, because I hadn't been given this working definition. I was thinking about caves, and something that I was thinking about in terms of what makes something a cave versus something we might want to give a different name to. Something that came to mind for me was the number of entry exit points.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, most everyone that I can think of, like off the top of my head, I picture, hey, this is a cave in my mind. It has like, one entry, one exit, right? You like, you
Right.
come in here, you come out there. Now you're at South Figaro or whatever. But no, you're right. It could have a lot of
Because, you know,
lot of
is
points. I hadn't thought about that angle.
because the game that I was thinking about, because the role-playing game with random encounters and caves that I have the most familiarity with is Pokemon, the original.
Holy shit.
And as far as single exit entry with random encounters, there actually aren't that many in the game, because
It does
most of
not have
them
many caves.
are there to be something in your path that you progress through. Like your Mount Moon, your rock tunnel, things like that. But there are only a handful of caves by that specific definition. Victory Road, another tunnel, if we make this cave tunnel differentiation. Which makes sense for Pokemon because that's a game about taking a journey. So you're sort of always going through
Yeah,
places
I
in
mean,
that game.
we are kind of inseparably talking about JRPGs. And what I
Yes.
wanted to get out of this discussion was the mechanical nitty-gritty of, well, why do we do these things? You know, why do we
Ah,
even have random encounters?
why build a cave?
And why do we have, you know, if we do have random encounters, then why do we have caves? I think it's the inevitable consequence of having both treasure and random encounters in a space. You will end up with a cave. So we can talk about, you know, we can talk about how you shape your cave. We can talk about the treasure to monster encounter ratio. We can talk about like encounter rates,
Right.
or we can talk about, you know, subdividing the cave into genres of cave, where
Right.
we have the cul-de-sac, the tunnel, the
The shape of the
the
cave,
outside world, that kind of thing.
right, you know, the game world itself has bounds in
Yeah,
a
so like
s
the
at
entire
least a
thing,
finite number
like
of
the entire map
positions.
of Pokemon is in a sense a cave.
Right.
So you get to you get to kind of dial in your own scope. And I certainly wanted to get into. Oh, I forget what I wanted to get into, actually. Or no, the mechanics of the random encounter, the
Yes.
very idea of it from the JRPG. And what kinds of thing lead us to think of like take caves or dungeons or whatever as good or bad? Like I want to get to the value judgment at the end of the day
How
because
do we?
let's be honest, you and I judge.
I am constantly
We just
judging.
judge.
I can't right now.
I don't mean to judge, but actually I do because this is what I do. I
I have a
judge.
cave in front of me
I
that I
have a
am
cave.
judging as we speak.
Because that
So.
was the sort of end goal of this conversation. It's like, okay, well, why is this intolerable but this one's fun? Is it because they have like a certain number of these of this kind of thing? And if so, what is this thing really, and why is it there? Yeah. But you enjoyed Pokemon since we're talking about that.
Yes, your original Red and Blue.
Yeah.
I excellent. Thousands of hours.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, and me too. Also, I mean, well, I had external reasons for wanting something to sink my hours into around the time when Pokemon came out that are part of a personal conversation to happen not on on stream or cast. Not on cast. I'm so used to saying on stream. All the doing. Streaming and playing
I'm
eternal
sure we've got a
card game.
few viewers right now.
Yeah, my
I say
animals.
as I nervously eye the corner of my room.
Okay, I have some animals that I willingly let into the apartment. I don't know what animals you have over there. Hopefully, willingly. Willing voyeurs, participants, whatever.
So the
But,
shape of caves. The shape of caves.
Shape of caves, shape of caves. So,
So,
yeah, the Pokemon. And, you know, so did you ever, like, feel during a playthrough of Pokemon, you know, I just want to get out of this goddamn cave?
did I actually see, it's easy for me to think that I would have thought that. But was I having a good time with all those
Yeah,
Zubats and
well,
Geodudes in that
right.
room?
Like you encounter your 15th Zubat in a row, and you're like, dee-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. And then what are you gonna do? You actually use the escape rope or dig command to
Right.
get the hell out of that cave?
And that's sort of a case where, the specific fauna of that cave, you've got Zubat who can confuse. I don't think it can actually poison at that level. But confusion is irritating to deal with, and it's difficult to run from because it has a high speed. So it's good at trapping you in a bad situation. Confusion, of course, can be cured simply by switching Pokemon, at which point it then confuses the one you just sent out, and you've gone nowhere. You have, in some ways, spent turns to maintain game state,
Yeah.
which doesn't feel great. Geodude at least has the decency to try and punch you. It can increase its defense, but not its special scores. So if you're packing special moves, you're doing okay.
Okay, so you think that the tolerability of a cave has to do with how well suited you are to dismiss the encounters in a speedy fashion.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Because, well, it. No, I think in general, because your cave is sort of full of filler encounters in the sense that none of these are individually likely designed to defeat the player, but this is an intended because the cave is this closed environment. You can't you have to expend resources to continue progressing through the cave, and so it's intended that each encounter makes you pay some amount of
Yeah,
resource.
and it explicitly in Pokemon you have PP on a
Right.
move. You're like, okay, so I have this move that can defeat a Zubat, and I have 10 PP. I can defeat 10 Zubats, kind
Right.
of very directly into out in terms of what you're getting. And not all games subdivide it that cleanly. It's like you have your HP and MP pools, your spells that restore HP, your items that restore HP, your items that restore MP, and so like we have more numbers leading to like your party survival through the thing. And then you can even say to yourself, well, do I really need my entire party to survive the cave, or can I really get down to the last hit point on my last guy as I breathe like fresh air on the other side of this thing? And that second thing is more the style of the Etrian Odyssey or Dragon Quarter, just the way the numbers shake out, where you are constantly spending resources to go distance.
Yes.
And that is the model for a lot of these games, but not all of the ones that I want to talk about tonight. Not all. Most. It's perhaps the essential experience of the cave. You spend stuff to go places.
Right, and sort of the cave on the on a higher design level is asking the question of like, to clear the cave, you must have a sufficient power level. It, like the inputs are your power level and your resources. And the output is you get through the cave or you don't. This getting wrinkled somewhat by adding elements in the cave that can increase the duration of time that you must remain within the cave. If there is a puzzle that you cannot, you mess up or you can't figure out, and you're wandering around trying to do the puzzle solution, and as you do, you have more random encounters, you spend more resources, whereas someone who came in there and instantly understood the puzzle simply wouldn't have as many encounters, even given, normal randomness for both players. So that kind of, so it's, I guess the third input is player ability to discern, to make correct cave decisions
Yeah,
as
I mean
far
that's
as where to go and what blocks to push.
right. So you sort of have you sort of have two puzzles to solve with Cave. And they somewhat overlap, but not directly, really. You have the puzzle of how efficiently can I stretch my resources? Or how well can I estimate how far I can get and can I get as far as I need. So that's like one, that's like an economic puzzle that you have to solve in Cave. And most of the time it's not straightforward. Never are you actually thinking on these terms, really, unless that's really like, I don't know, maybe that's how you derive enjoyment from games or whatever. You make a chart, it's like, okay, I can on average cover 15 map tiles, so let's do this,
Right.
let's get all
And
those
that, of
map
course,
tiles.
assumes that you know how big the cave
Right,
is.
which is the second puzzle, which is a far more boring and basic puzzle of mental map making. You always do this. Humans are especially well suited to remembering the layout of stuff and the locations of places. It's really built into us from like the days when we were endurance runners, and the main ways that we collected food was by hunting animals, by chasing them until we outran them. And humans couldn't go very fast, but they could like keep running basically forever. This is still basically the case that you can have horse versus human marathons, and depending on the distance, at some point humans will win out. Which is crazy to think about, right?
A horse is very fast,
Like,
Kaz,
I know,
but
but
only
you
for
can outrun a
what?
horse. I'm telling you, you can train and you can outrun a horse. Distance run. Distance run.
How many horses can I outrun,
You can,
Kaz?
like, all of them. You can outrun all the
What?
horses. It's like
What?
built into you. But I'm saying, like, part of being the endurance runner as an archetype was having a long memory for where you had been. Because if you're just used to going long distances and you don't have a very good mental map-making memory, you're just gonna get lost.
Ah,
You will
yes.
not remember food sources that so you saw a berry bush on the way while you were chasing this gazelle. You're gonna have to remember where that was if you want to also collect the berries and get home. And that was an important part of the human experience. We're still basically endurance runners, we just don't directly realize it, I think. This is a long form way of saying that even when you don't realize you're doing it, you are mentally map making. And you look at stuff, and you're solving mazes, and you're remembering where things were and how to get back to them from where you are. So, those are the two puzzles. You have the, like, efficiency problem and the map problem. And they're related to one another because if you efficiently do the I'm yeah, conflating my own language here because I hadn't like mapped this out carefully in my head, even though we're good at mental mapping and So if you're good at the maze part of things, you will not have to walk over as many tiles to get from where you are to where you want to go. And if you're good at the resource part of things and solve that efficiently, you can give yourself more tiles to look at. And so one kind of leads to the other. Again, rarely will you actually think on these terms when you're just doing a JRPG or whatever, and I would say that I would I, well postulate
Postulate.
postulate no that's not a one that's not a word I would estimate postulate whatever you want to call it that part of the enjoyment of a JRPG derives from this exact cross of challenges that you don't even realize you're doing. And the more you don't realize that that's what's happening, the more likely it is, I think, that you'll actually enjoy it. Like, you're not gonna think back, "Oh, wow, I got through that cave in 17 steps. That was great." No, you're gonna say, "Ah, I made it out alive with all my characters. I got all this cool loot, and we gained some levels. Cool."
Speedrunners may enjoy the 17
There's certainly a
cases,
case to
but
be made for like reducing the problem to these raw terms and then dividing it up that way. And the opposite might also be true. If you don't like doing mental map making and careful resource allocation, then games that demand a high level of that are just going to seem like a slog. I'm thinking in particular about the Etrian Odyssey flavor,
Ah,
which is, I
yes.
believe, up to this point, since we've been talking about Pokemon, we're talking about non-modular caves. The cave is just what it is. They design the whole map, and so when you have a non-modular cave, you can bother to, put your tiles anywhere you want, and they're always going to be fixed that way. You, as the designer, I mean, and you make your little maze. Everyone who plays your game solves the same maze, that kind of thing. They can read a guide, they can draw a map and share it with their friends. Friend has the same map. Fine. With, I hope it's Etrian Odyssey that's the thing. I haven't actually played this game. I was just sort of
Oh, I
exploring it.
have played Etrian
Okay.
Odyssey,
But
so.
that's, I believe that one is a modular cave, right? Where it's made out of different pieces but procedurally generated so that.
I'm not actually sure because I didn't get very far because I found the resource efficiency solving part of the game to be far too taxing and I gave up.
That's fair. That's fair. I've heard it's very demanding in that regard. So I'm going to, okay, even if it isn't the, even if that is not a characteristic of this specific game, I do believe that some games do use it, so I'm going to use Etrian Odyssey as my stand-in for that kind of game, if
Sure,
that's
I
okay.
accept.
So yeah. So in the modular design, you're not actually, as the designer, certain of which direction your player is going to enter a particular like tile or room or whatever from. Like, you can design it such that like this one is a dead end, so they can only get through it this way, sure, but then you're just talking about the non-modular design again, stapled onto like the modular design. But in modular design, you have like exits here, and it can fit next to like this type of square and this type of square, and it's I don't know where the end of that sentence was going. Modular.
Modular
Yeah,
dungeon
I get lost.
design
It's fine. I get lost
cannot.
sometimes. But no, with modular design, it's much more a almost pre-reduced for you sense of how far can I actually get in this goddamn thing. Because you don't know that there's a right solution to the map, because the map is random. You can't share that with your friends. You can only get further in. So let's say for the sake of argument that like of my two like puzzles at cross purposes here, the map making part of things is more complicated in an Etrian Odyssey. Like, you kind of have to be good at it, or else you're going to like
Right.
double back a
And
lot
that's
and.
even a feature of the game is that as you explore the dungeon, you in-game construct a map.
Right.
And you can make a mistake doing this, and then your map is wrong.
Oh, that's kind of beautiful, actually. I like that. Like, a lot of games have the auto map, and
Yes,
so it
this
just
does
does it for you as you go.
not.
But no, there was another one that Rosella was showing me. It was a Persona Q, like a re-release on the 3DS of
Yes,
Persona games,
that
and it
involved some of
also.
the Etrian Odyssey developers.
Oh, Okay,
It was
well.
very much Etrian and Odyssey cross persona.
Oh my god. Okay, I guess that's how that happened. And now I know. And now I know how all of this came to pass.
Which
But no,
is.
yeah. So it had the it had that same thing, I guess, and that's where it came from, where it sort of auto maps for you, like kind of around where you are, a little. But it also lets you draw things in as you go, so you like leave this map behind for yourself. So that's it's I guess more important to involve yourself in the act of map making, mental or otherwise, when you play these games. And the resource acquisition and whatever the opposite of acquisition is, spending?
Expenditure.
Expenditure. There it is. The resource I don't have expenditure on my tongue. The resource acquisition expenditure part of things, I guess, also becomes important. Like each one sort of makes the other more important. Like if I'm efficiently solving one, I can go further here. If I go further here, I can make a better map so that I don't, waste my steps, so that I don't need to spend as many resources. So it kind of multiplies in that direction. Tragically, also in the opposite direction. If you have a terrible map, or you get teleported, or you're low on resources and you can't go very far, you really have to start guessing. You can no longer be certain about what path to take that will get you where you need to go in the most efficient way, because you can't bother to explore everywhere. So if the act of exploration is itself fun, then I think cave can be fun. I think that's what I'm trying to get to. I don't know if I'm there yet, 'cause we're still kind of talking about modular cave.
The act of gaining information about the maze you are solving.
Right. And certainly, like, one stripped of the other is a far less interesting challenge. So I have two opposites for that. I guess we could draw a graph or something at some point. But we have two like diametric points, opposites of this. There is map making and solving without any random encounters. And there is all encounters and no map to speak of to actually solve. It's just like
Right,
one encounter after the other.
the 15 fights room.
Right. So I'm going to talk about Bravely Default and Final Fantasy Mystic Quest
I
to do
take it
these.
away.
So Bravely Default has the option to turn random encounters off. There's a little slider. It's default to zero for like plus minus 0% random encounters, or a normal amount of random encounters. And you can go down to minus 100%, meaning there are no random encounters at all. And you can also go plus 100% to double the rate of random encounters if you really want. And that's, they just put the thing in your hands because that's a, it's kind of a band-aid for a problem rather than an actual fix for the problem. When you do this, the maps themselves are not very interesting. They're almost immediately made trivial and kind of tedious. Every single dungeon is lifted almost directly from like child's first maze book, and you're like, ah, well, that branch end has a treasure chest at the end. I will pick it, and then you like go on through the rest of the thing, and it robs the dungeon of having any teeth, because there's no random encounters to get in your way anymore.
Like
It's
you
just a
took all
bit
the
of
teeth out.
yeah, it's just a bit of tedium then. Why do I even have to walk through this? You'll find yourself saying, "What's the point of this?" And then you might find yourself saying, "Well, what's the point of any of it?" And put the game down because you're not enjoying yourself.
Just eat the DS card.
Now, do not eat or lick Nintendo things. They are gross. I know why that's a thing, but it should not be a thing. It's so awful.
Because the placement of the treasure chest at the end of the long hall is a design decision based around the idea you will have to expend resources to walk there and back.
Right. And is it worth it to you? Are you willing to
risk
that many steps
in this box
for an unknown reward?
Do you want to make the trade?
Yeah. So that's one end point, shall we say, of this spectrum. And
yes.
Or this graph, I guess. And the other is Mystic Quest, which, as a substitute for dungeons, it had some caves and dungeons in the sort of the sense that we've been talking about so far tonight, but it also had just sort of map spots. So you had, like, this is the town, and you would go to the next node over, and that was a map spot where you could just do 5 encounters. So it wasn't random. You elected to go into the battle arena. And if you cleared them out, you got a little bonus, I think, but it might have just been the substitute for grinding. Like, you can't grind in that game, really. You can just expend all of the battle nodes to all of the, like, much, much less interesting, the battle toads, I'm afraid, all of the battle nodes until they're gone, and then move on to whatever you need to be doing. And I think some of them are required. Like, you have to do at least one fight in a node to go further than it.
Mm.
But even still, the point is it isn't random. So you just have encounters, and you do not have a map to solve.
Right.
So that puzzle is completely removed. Which, even though I love Mystic Quest as a game, this is certainly its lowest point. let me go to the encounter zone. I will fight 5 monsters in the arena, 1 at a time, in a sequence. It's just so raw, devoid of any of the color of exploration and adventure that we find ourselves doing in the standard fare JRPG kind of stuff.
I hand you the math worksheet, and I say, solve this and then give it back, and then you get to go to the next story beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really what it is. So, one without the other feels tedious. It, you know, regardless of which one you actually pick to remove which one you do. So there really is something special about doing the two together. The question of, do you want to expend this resource to take this step? I kind of like that in principle. In specific executions, I can come up with a lot of bad examples, but I can't immediately come up with a lot of good ones. So maybe this is something of a problem with video games or JRPGs. I don't really know. I'm not willing to say authoritatively that this is a problem, but I do know it's hard. Like,
oh, certainly. Making games is basically impossible.
Yeah, well, even designing them, like, before you've made the damn thing, even, like, planning out what you will make is just dreadfully difficult. I can't think of any dungeon or any cave I got through in any of the games that I'm using as examples where after I was done with the thing, I was like, man, what an amazing dungeon! That was so good. Like, nothing sticks with me that way. Maybe it had a particular encounter in it, or like one room that had a special encounter in it or something, and I would kind of remember that. Or if it had a unique treasure, then I would try to like remember that for successive playthroughs where I'm like, oh man, you can get this cool treasure in this dungeon. It's just in this little out-of-the-way place. And, you know, because I had that memory formed, I would be able to get there more efficiently and not spend as many resources to get there, so the game would be overall easier, or depending on, like, how you've actually meted things out. Yeah. Level design is hard, but it's also important. And I really think that iteration is the most important tool for doing that if you're going to do non-modular dungeons. Like, you can have your general plan of, you know, keys and locks, or, like, a switch that makes a ladder happen, or like the path that the player needs to take through the thing, side areas. You know, Luigi smashes Mario so he's small, and then Mario goes into the little side area to, you know, do his jumping challenge while he's small, or Mario smashes Luigi into the ground, and then Luigi digs through the dirt and pops up elsewhere and has his little side area. Heck, maybe Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga is the game where there was some really clever dungeon design that I never gave them credit for. Did that game have random encounters, or were they overworld?
No, they were all visible on the map, okay. And there was a first strike
right.
type of mechanic.
And like, so the other example that I definitely wanted to talk about tonight, which was Lufia 2, does not have caves in the sense that we're talking about, but you know, it has hundreds of caves. It's like everywhere is a cave. You go to the cave between this town and that town. You go to that town's cave. You go to the bigger cave at the end where the big thing is, and it's like, ah,
cave.
So full of caves. But in the sense of random encounters, didn't have any. Well, no, it had overworld random encounters, but anytime you were in the dungeon itself, all of the monsters were physical map objects that would move when you move.
Yes, sort of a turn-based system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It did have like turn-based movement for the maze-solving part of things. So you could choose whether to get into encounters, and you even had dungeon tools to be able to manipulate enemies and your environment. So the dungeons themselves were a little more involved, just slightly more complex, and it made it feel really good and organic. It's like, wow, I'm really solving this. And Lufia 2 commonly gets credited with like Legend of Zelda like design for that, because in your archetypical Legend of Zelda game, you're running around some dungeon, pushing levers, using your tools to shoot switches, and you still have like visible, interactable monsters to deal with. But you know, you can run past them, you can defeat them with your sword, you can, if you defeat three of them, then like a door opens, that kind of thing. It's all variations on that theme, and Lufia 2 had that. In a sense, you know, you still had your dungeon tools. Not a cave, though. I really wanted it to be a cave. The substitution of the, like, overworld monster bump into starts the encounter for random encounter is an important one. I'm not going to say that it's just good or bad. It's a tool. Maybe I am saying that the random encounter is bad. It's hard to say. There's kind of a lot to it.
The random encounters that just, you know, every X steps we're going to tax your resources, and that's just how it goes.
Mm-hmm. And with the Lufia 2 style, it does end up accomplishing the same thing. Like there are situations where if you're clever or you're familiar with how these monsters move or whatever, you can get around them. But frequently, it's the case that you can't. So it's more a matter of mentally preparing for the encounter that you know is going to happen, which is very similar to a random encounter anyway. But it feels more organic because you can see the guy.
Right, you see it's coming, and it happens. When you say, okay, this happens now, and then the game says, understood, it begins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, rather than the game telling you what has happened to you, you are telling the game what is happening to it.
It does involve the player more in how they encounter the game, which is really good. And not in the literal and direct sense of Bravely Default saying, okay, I want no encounters now, and the game saying, okay, you hit a switch.
Wait, that's changing a number somewhere.
Ever doing things. I can't say enough bad things about that particular feature. I kind of despite it. I also use it. I mean, it's
other,
there.
Other Final Fantasy games have had items available that turn off random encounters. The Moogle's Charm.
Yep.
From 6.
The Diablo ability in the girlfriend ability for Diablos, where you can equip Ankh Nun.
Yes.
And then.
And that's just
no random encounter.
Nun. I guess that feels a little different because you have to earn it.
Yeah, like you have to level up Diablos in order to get that, or you have to discover the Moogle Charm, which is like well into you're pretty deep into the game by that point.
Right, and that's more of the game saying at that point, like, okay, maybe you just want to walk to a few places where you want to check for treasure you missed, and the enemies there are likely trivial for you, and are not an interesting or useful expenditure
right.
of your time. So just get to it.
I suppose similar to the Lufia 2 question of things, there's the Earthbound model where... You know, there were overworld monsters and not random encounters, but they were basically impossible to avoid.
Frequently. If they wanted you, they'd probably get you.
They could just walk at you, and they would get you. But, you know, you would, if you powered up, then they would run away from you, and you could, like, touch them, and then it would just sort of skip the encounter entirely and give you the reward.
Right, it's like, you got this.
So, like... No, stomp. Okay. And because I had never seen that in a game, that felt really good that first time. It was like, oh, I guess we just win. That's awesome.
Sometimes you just win.
Yeah. So you're right. That like something like that feels good when you earn it. But it feels sort of dumb when it's just a setting in the menu. So... But the whole point of the encounter at all is to do that that second axis question, you know, apply your strategic and tactical thinking to the balance of resources, or also, you know, look at our cool monsters, aren't they cool looking?
Look at our cool freaking monsters.
Have you seen every monster?
Have you seen the skeleton turtle yet, Kaz?
Hmm?
The skeleton turtle.
I have not seen the skeleton turtle.
Oh,
man.
You got lucky if you got through the dungeon without skeleton turtle.
I feel like an NPC in town should say that. Like, they'll ask you, have you seen this? And, like, you can answer yes or no. They just so... I'm sure that's happened in a couple of JRPGs. Maybe even a couple that we've mentioned so far tonight. But, Every encounter is the opportunity to spend and gain resources.
Right. Typically an expenditure of some combination of hit points, ability points, whatever they happen to be called in your game, and then restorative items are typically the resources that in some combination get expended or sometimes merely exchanged. And
you can crank the dial, right? You can crank the dial to the point where your players are essentially only gaining resources and not really spending them. And that's frequently available in something like Bravely Default. In Romancing Saga 3, every new encounter would be and that game also did not have random encounters, but had overworld monsters that you bumped into to start the encounter. At the start of every encounter, like once you left an encounter, it restored all characters to full hit points just automatically.
Right,
just like you rest up and you're ready to go, which sped up a lot of different things, but also slowed down others. So in Romancing Saga 3, every single encounter was way more dangerous and powerful than it would be
because
in something
we
like Pokemon.
Know the players going in.
You know they're going in
fully
full.
Loaded.
That you, we gave you your gave you your hit points back, so we are going to pressure you for all of your hit points in every encounter, and that's not something that you could do in something like Pokemon, where you know you don't even realize it until you're halfway through a dungeon how ruined you are because you know these dumb enemies that were so easy to beat with your 10 PP move, now there's you're on the 11th one. And what do you do now?
They'll never defeat my most powerful lieutenant, the 11th Zubat.
The 11th Zubat. No! And you start having... It forces you to like reevaluate the kind of moves that you carry around or the kind of Pokemon that you use to get in places. And it becomes, I hope, an interesting question of like, what do I actually want in my party for like general walking around? That's if it is successful, that becomes an interesting question. If it's not successful, then it becomes a question of, well, why don't they just let me full heal? Why don't I have a healing station, which is more the Pokemon Black and White flavor of things, where it seemed like every single route had someone on it who was like, oh, I'm a doctor, I'm a nurse, oh, this is my house, you can sleep here. And there seemed to be a lot of Pokemon centers outside of actual Pokemon centers in that game. So they also seem to have this sense of, you know, we don't want to tax your resources too hard, just keep going, it'll be fine. Which is more of a kid gloves approach, I guess. And, you know, I'm not ready to subject every human child to the dire spreadsheet resource meltdown that is something like Dragon Quarter.
I still gotta play that. I want to be melted by a spreadsheet with 20.
Man. My advice would be to take in as little information about it as you can before you...
I know that you die and that's okay. Just do it again.
Yep.
That's what I knew going in,
and it was. I did die, and it was okay, and I did it again, and it was fun. The part of what made Dragon Quarter fun when I played it was the fact that the game could present what seemed like insurmountable, unreasonable challenges. The kind of thing that in any other JRPG would be like, oh, this is the boss who is too powerful and just beats you as a story point. That is never the case in Dragon Quarter. There is no encounter that you run into that is actually impossible. Some of them are challenging, and most of them look unreasonable and like you don't have enough stuff to do it, but you actually do. You can do it. You have enough stuff. And when you dismantle one of these powerful encounters with the resources that you have available, it feels really sweet. You're like, oh, man. Totally dunked him. This is also the kind of game that will make you question whether you want to heal your main character for 30 hit points with a 50 hit point restoring item, or if you're willing to wait for them to get damaged just a little more so that you can get the full 50 out of it.
Right. You know, that's... Don't leave 20 hit points on the table. Come on, that's...
You're just throwing it away.
That's 40% of the item.
You're not using all of the buffalo.
You have to use the entire potion.
Man.
Now to add the potion measuring minigame into a game where it's like, well, they said that this potion will restore 100 hit points, but if you pour out just the right amount, then...
Oh, man, and it takes you to, like, a WarioWare-style minigame where you have to tilt the controller to, like, pour it.
Yes.
Then it's sloshing around, and you have to estimate how it is. To decant your own potion.
This process takes 15 minutes.
Oh, Lord. You have to... Ah, yes, the waiting minigame, where you make the player gradually watch a retort distill volatile vapors and essences down into the cooling tube.
Look. I think it's basically a miracle of our society that we have this easily available liquid that can cure your injuries. I think you can wait 15 minutes for it to start working.
Okay, and that's another NPC bit of dialogue from whatever this game that we played is.
JRPG for
So I
fuckers.
guess what I what I'm ultimately getting at is that when I was first experiencing JRPGs, I didn't really feel random encounters that much. I just sort of accepted them, you know? I didn't ever say to myself, "Oh, I guess I have to grind here a while." I'm just like, "Oh, let's fight some monsters. They look kind of cool. What can I do?" And like consequently, every like childhood playthrough of like Final Fantasy that I did, my characters were always overpowered and the game seemed really easy, and when I would get to the like bosses, I'm like, "What is this? What is this joke stuff?" Where like all of my adult playthroughs of similar games, I've been constantly taxed for resources because I'm trying to speed through them as quickly as I can because I'm like, man, how many random encounters are you gonna throw at me already? Stupid. Can I
No
turn them
one's
off?
got
Oh my
time for
god, I
this.
can. Yeah, who's got time for this shit? But almost paradoxically, I better appreciate the resource balancing question, and I'm really more interested in a game that's willing to make that an issue or make that kind of difficult. Because it feels really good when you get it right. Whereas I cannot imagine my childhood self playing through Dragon Quarter. Like, oh my God, what is that?
It's a
Why is everything
JRPG
so
for
hard?
adults, Kaz.
I don't. Yeah. I didn't really want to say it quite that way, but I guess that is kind of what I was getting at, like a mature version of Dungeon. And I don't mean the like full frontal nudity kind of mature audiences only mature, but I do expect that the latter or the second thing that I was talking about would more appeal to someone who has played through a lot of JRPGs. And the former would be like, well, I've done this already. You know, I get it. And your dungeon looks stupid. That's kind of what I expect. I don't want to call one childish and the other adult. Although I kind of do, because of Pokemon. I feel like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon fits in here somewhere.
Well, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon has the modular sort of dungeon design. You get thrown onto the floor of the dungeon, and basically you just want to find the stairs down. In general, you want to avoid as many encounters as you can because they are attacks on your resources. They don't take very long at all. On the order of any given individual enemy Pokemon can generally be dispatched in 10 to 15 seconds. And there's not a separate battle screen or anything like that, so there's nothing like that to take up your time. But your resources, that game does a very, or at least for me, it did a very good job of making me think very carefully about, like you said, Pokemon with the PowerPoint system for any kind of move you make. I'd be like, okay, do I just. But in Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, importantly, you also have this sort of basic attack that does not cost any resource, but is kind of not great.
Yeah, like
Also,
a kind of
you earn
fallback.
less XP from monsters if you only use the basic attack to defeat them.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So, I'd run into a monster and be like, okay, I'm at full hit points. My partner's at full hit points. Let's just lay into it, slug it out. I'll be fine. I don't need to spend the PowerPoint because if you actually used your PowerPoint move on every enemy, you're just dry by halfway through the dungeon. And then what are you going to do about the boss? What are you going to do if you run into a monster house? And it's like, I'd be like, okay, I can use this move down to three, but I need to keep three around in case I get dumped into a monster house. Because that is how I will just get the heck out of there and not have to fight eight Pokemon at once.
Dump me in the monster house.
Dump me in the monster house, and then there's
Yeah.
hunger because we're trying to be like Shirin the
Ooh.
Wanderer, which is trying to be like
Okay,
Rogue.
okay. One last thing that I remember is kind of important to this that I feel is important to the discussion before we close it down. And I do kind of want to close it down because the
Okay, I have
headset is
one
really
more
pinching.
dungeon that one more
Okay.
game that I want to mention the dungeons for.
Okay. Then I'll mention my point and you'll mention the game, and that'll be we'll be good. Part of the a lot of these games that we've been talking about, you talking about Pokemon Mystery Dungeon reminded me of this, have random encounters that send you to a separate screen, right? Sending you to a separate screen interrupts your mental map making. So it says, hey, slap, stop that. Sometimes there's even like a shattering glass noise to try and like divert your attention from the task that you were just performing. Where something like Chrono Trigger, for instance, did not have a separate screen. Rather, your characters just continued on the screen that they were on and did the encounter thing.
Yeah,
Which.
the music would change and they'd get into position,
But that
but
allows you
you're on the
to.
screen.
Yeah, that allows you to have a continuous mental map as you go along. The mental map making process has not been interrupted by the battle. The battle is just another step of that process. So that was one of the most clever things that Chrono Trigger did in a game full of clever things. It was quite good. That's all. That was the
Okay,
entire
so
point.
on the topic of Chrono Trigger, which is the third best Final Fantasy, I'd like to talk about the second best Final Fantasy, which is Gyromancer,
Aha.
which is a game that fully acknowledges that a dungeon is just moving through a set of points that are connected and can be represented as a graph, and you just do that.
No, it just has the node
It
and
has
point
nodes,
to
and you move
node.
from node to node. You can see quite a bit of it at a time. You can see where the monsters are. They move when you move. There are some dungeon features that you cannot perceive until you step on their node. But a lot of dungeon features that you can see from a good distance away, and so you can be like, okay, these enemies are circling around this area. Do I want to even bother with them? And I love Gyromancer, and I think it's basically what they decided to do there was correct. They're like, what we really want to do is just present the information really plainly and be like, you can go, along this route or that route, and if it doesn't look like two things connect, then they probably don't, but maybe they do just off screen.
Yeah. No, there's definitely a space for nodes in these caves that we've been talking about so far. But the only graphical quality of a cave that I can absolutely and flat out recommend you always include in your cave if you choose to design one is skulls.
Skulls.